From the yeehaws
to the yayhoos
and everything in between,
this podcast is for you.
In this episode of the podcast, we sit down with Sarah Stafford, where some might know her from the 5S Arena shows, or others might know her from the lesson program that she has and the impact that she makes on our local barrel racing industry. If you don't know Sarah, she's definitely a lady worth getting to know. So take a listen.
Hey guys, we're back with another episode and we have Miss Sarah Stafford. I don't know how we talked her into it, but actually I think I do know how we talked her into it, because she had just given a speech about getting out of your comfort zone the weekend before. So
yes, I felt like it would be very hypocritical not to do this.
Perfect timing. We're going to take advantage of it. And I've seen several comments online where everybody enjoyed your speech. So
well, yeah, good. She said, what kind of speech did she give, like, coming down?
Cause yeah, because I had read the comments. Oh, yeah. I was like, people really seemed to enjoy it. So yeah.
It was kind of last minute. Kevin kind of threw me under the bus there a little bit, but it worked out, and we got it done, and I didn't pass out in front of everybody, so.
Well, this is in her house with not, like, this is very casual, so hopefully you'll be good, yeah.
Much better.
That's right.
I don't feel like I'm going to puke. So.
Well, Holly messaged me last week, and she was like, we have to find somebody for the podcast. She was like, and you know, I want it to be somebody who, like, people want to hear from, and somebody that people really respect and whatever. And so we were like brainstorming, and I said, Sarah Stafford. And she was like, oh my God, yes. She was like, exactly. Aww. So
that makes me feel good you guys thought of me.
Oh yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
I'm like, that's perfect, because like, we want to get to know all the barrel racers in our area, but also right. I feel like you have a lot of knowledge that we can tap into for people around here.
So yeah, and people really respect you. They have a lot of respect for you and your knowledge and the way you train, and I've never heard anything bad about you.
So. Aww,
and I've known you for a long time, too, yeah. Or of you. We've been acquaintances for a long time with horse dealings.
For sure.
Which we'll get into.
And we were just talking about social media earlier, but that is so impressive. Like, I think about it, I've never heard anything bad about her either. And usually at least one person has a...
Something negative.
Yeah, like, you're always someone's enemy, but I don't think you are.
Well, I hope not. I try to stay, like, even like I said in my speech, like, I'm usually the person behind the scenes or in the tractor.
Yeah.
And I like being that. So hopefully that keeps me out of the trouble.
Yeah.
people like me better that way.
So yeah, I think that we will just get started. Tell us how you got into horses and
a little of your backstory. Yeah.
Okay. Well, my dad's family has actually been into horses for a long time. They did saddle horses and gated horses, showed them, and so I've been around horses since I was teeny tiny. And then Dad decided he wanted to play cowboy and got a quarter horse, and we never looked back. He started raising some quarter horses. They did that all through junior high and high school. I mean, my parents had 50 horses at one point.
Oh my.
And
wow.
Yes. So I've had lots of ponies, I've had lots of horses, good horses, and so yeah, I've been around horses my whole life, and we actually started off doing rodeo. I never really was into the barrel racing, like the associations, mm-hmm. I guess I should say. We did rodeo, and
like high school,
all
junior
over.
High, is that mm-hmm. where you
started?
Started
in peewee.
Okay.
West Virginia didn't have peewee at the time, so we actually rode for Virginia, and they were closer for us too, even as we got into high school. Like, a lot of their rodeos were really close. So we stayed in Virginia and, traveled, went to nationals, and then went to college and rodeoed, and came back home.
I think you guys were still doing Virginia stuff when I met you, actually, because I thought you lived in Virginia. I didn't realize
that.
I didn't realize that you actually lived in West Virginia until the last 5 years, probably.
Yeah.
Because
we did. We rodeoed for the Virginia high school team.
Yeah. So. Yeah, and I don't know your parents super well. I know your mom better mm-hmm. than your dad. I've only met your dad maybe once or twice.
He's a man of few words.
Yeah. But they remind me of my parents, because I mean, we didn't raise horses, but like my parents always kept me on good horses.
Yes.
And so I feel like that's kind of how you were raised too.
Oh gosh.
Ponies
yeah.
and, but dad never, like I never had, which is a good and a bad thing when you are raised on good horses, because
yes.
I think it makes you less tolerant for the bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
And my dad always says, you know, it costs the same to feed a good one as it does a bad one.
1,000%.
And so, you know, that's a good thing, but sometimes I think I probably miss out on good horses because I won't deal with
some
of the shit, you know.
Yeah.
But it is what it is, you know.
Yes, for
so.
Sure.
So when you were in rodeo, high school rodeo,
yep.
Did you always buy, like, finished horses? Or did you have horses? Did you start training then? When did training kind of come into play?
So I was on finished horses. Most of the time until my, well, I guess I got him in eighth grade. My parents got me a horse from Mike Green down in South Carolina.
Yep.
And he was 4 at the time, I think. We went down and, I don't know if you've ever been to Mike's to try horses, but you go and he's got like 10 horses tied to the wall and you ride all of them and you can pick from which one you want.
Yeah, it sounds like Glenn Watkins. Not quite
great.
As big.
Sounds
but
like Linda.
So we went down there and my sister and I were both looking for kind of our next steps horses, and my sister found this one, been there, done that, good guy, and then I picked this 4-year-old that I just loved, and my parents thought I was crazy and he was a little crazy and wasn't I guess finished. He'd been started and he had a really good start. And so I kind of got to finish him, I guess, and
mm-hmm.
haul him more. And we had a year of hitting barrels and a year of going. And I rode with Ducky Keller some, too. So I would go and ride with Ducky, and he helped me a ton with him and working through all his young issues and alley issues. He had a lot of issues, but turned out to be a really good one. But he was probably the first one that I, like, learned to have to train on.
Yeah.
'Cause he didn't. He knew his job, but he still needed a lot of help and still needed a lot of tuning along the way.
Yeah.
So, and luckily my parents got me tons of help along the way. Just really good mentors. And that was amazing. Like I don't think I'd be where I was without those kind of people, but my mom would haul me down because she didn't know anything about barrel horses.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
so she would haul me down and get help. And, so probably Spice. And a good many people probably know Spice, too.
He's yep, I remember
Kaya
Spice.
Kaya rode him later. And
yep.
Kaya Osborne.
Yeah.
He was just cool dude.
Yeah,
so, I remember him.
He was probably the first one. And then after that, I bought another finished horse. Well, I thought she was finished. In college. And, but you know barrel horses. You're constantly tuning on them and adjusting and doing that stuff. And then after I moved back home is probably when I started riding a bunch of babies for people. And I've got to learn all about that.
Yeah.
So,
that's a whole other ballgame.
It's a whole other world, isn't
yes.
it?
Yes.
Well, and you said something, too, about, like, your parents finding you mentors. And I just think that is so overlooked. My parents did the same thing.
Yes.
And, you know, I rode with, like, when I bought Breeze, you know, back then Breeze, she had an arena record when we bought her. Like, she was a really nice horse, and it took me 2 years to get with this horse. And my dad used to, we bought her, and the very first barrel race I took her to, I won the barrel race at 4T Arena. And then, you know, it just slowly went down and down and down. And so then we would take her back to Glenn, and Glenn would keep her 2 weeks and he would fix her. And then I would go ride with him a couple times before we'd pick her up. And then I would screw her up again after like a couple, you know, I mean, I just feel like that's so important, like, to find people that know what they're doing and can help you do things the right way, you know, and like we used to haul to 4T when I got Tonto,
mm-hmm.
you know, and we would haul up there like once a week. My dad would pick me up from school and we would go, but you know, it's just, that's so important.
Oh.
I think, and I don't think a lot of parents realize like how important that is for your kid.
1,000% agree. I think I see that a lot now with kids. They lack a lot of confidence and just the knowledge, and we put them on, and just like you and me, got put on really nice horses, But you got to learn how to ride those nice horses, and they won't stay nice unless you do.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And,
you know, we paid.
You need help.
We paid 12 grand for her, which was a lot of money back then, you know, for us. I mean, I know people were buying horses for 50,000, but that was a lot of money. And you could buy a really nice horse for 12 or 15,000 when I was in high school. Now, I mean, you still can, but it's not the same, you know. Right. And a lot of people do that, and they think because they spend that much money that that horse is going to continue to win, and that is not the case. If you don't have the tools, that horse is not going to stay there.
Yes.
And people don't get that. They think, well, I spent $20,000 on this horse. It's an animal with its own brain. You think he's going to work if he doesn't have to work? Oh, no. Right.
And they went from their previous rider to a new rider. So that horse is confused because they're learning you as much as you're learning them.
Exactly.
Everybody's got different styles. And I think it's important to find someone who fits you. Like, I rode with a lot of people, and sometimes it just isn't a good fit.
Exactly.
And that's okay, and there's nothing wrong with it. You just need to adjust and find someone that does fit your style and fit your horse's style, or just someone that can communicate in a way that gets through to you.
Yes.
And then you can get a lot done.
Yeah. But,
and so, as like far as training skills, would you say that more so that comes from just like experience of different horses, or would you say more so from your mentors?
Ooh, I mean, I'm such a lover of horses. I think a lot of it came from the horses. Like, but I think that's because, too, I had good mentors that taught me along the way to listen to my horses.
Yes.
To a little bit.
And to be more adjustable myself instead of trying to always change my horses to fit me.
Yes.
They were all really encouraged me to... It's a two-way communication, not just one way. Mm-hmm. You know, like, they're speaking to you just as much as you're speaking to them, and you got to listen. So,
yeah.
To learn what works. So, I don't know. It's 50-50.
And another thing that I've always respected you for is your horsemanship. Like, sure, you can find a lot of people that can train horses good or train different style horses, but you do it in the right way, and, like, you are always so in tune with that horse's brain and, like, not stressing them out and doing that in the right way. And I feel like that's really
you're an advocate for the horse, I think.
Yeah, and that's
not
few,
the sport, the
that's
horse.
Few and yes. far between. And so, like, where did you learn that horsemanship? Like, did that come prior to even rodeo? Like, was that something your parents instilled in you, or was it just natural for you?
I would say yes. It definitely came from my parents. My parents they're good people, mm-hmm. and they are they've always put our horses first. And, I mean, we've messed up along the ways and learned along the dusty trail.
You know, we've
learned a ton. And you look back and everything. But I definitely learned that through my parents. But I think, too, just we go through a lot of life. And I've just seen my horses show up for me so many times. Mm-hmm. And, like, just be so important to me and help me get through things that I have so much value in them. Like, I just think of them so highly that I tend to want to always put them first because I know they don't owe me anything.
Right.
And yet they show up every day and they're willing and they're trying, even though sometimes they have no idea what I want, and they give their all. And so
that's so true.
They're amazing.
Yeah, you know? They are.
Yep.
Yeah.
That they don't and kill then, us.
Yes.
Yeah.
Really?
They could. Absolutely.
They could.
And everything we ask of them.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's really funny.
And I think now, too, where I give a lot of lessons, and so I see these horses take care of kids, and I see these kids make mistakes and cue wrong, and these horses are just so forgiving.
Yes.
And so kind to them. And
they
so
are.
It keeps reiterating, like, gosh, these horses are amazing.
Yeah. I see
they
that.
They deserve the world.
I see that a lot with... It's really made me, I don't know, appreciate the yellow horse I have, Happy. Like, we don't get along. Like, he's not my style. I don't really think he loves me. And, like, I don't love him, but I do respect him for the horse that he is. And that's why, I didn't sell him for so long because I just was so worried he would get in the wrong hands. But, like, as annoying as he is to me, what he does for Rayleigh, like, even though he does knock barrels with her, like, when he's at home and she's riding him, like, he's so good with her, and he takes care of her, and he's taught her so much this year. And like, I don't know, like, I feel like people just like roll their eyes whenever you mention his name, but like, I just have so much respect for him because of that, you know, because of how nice of a horse he is.
Well,
you know?
I think that that goes back to too, like, loving the horse, like, just because he doesn't want to run barrels, just because someone taught him to do it incorrectly, like, doesn't make him a bad horse.
Or make him less of a horse.
Yes.
And I feel like you know, like, live that. And so, like, that's to me, like, everybody's like, I would get rid of that horse. Well, I don't want to see, like, he is such a nice horse. He's so broke. Like, he doesn't do anything wrong other than knock barrels. So, like, just because he doesn't, I don't even want to say he doesn't want to be a barrel horse, but, like, whatever the deal, whatever happened to him whenever he was in training, because I got him back, like, doing what he does now.
Mm-hmm.
But it's, like, just because he doesn't want to go in there and run barrels every day, like, that doesn't make him less of a horse or less valuable
totally
or
agree.
Less whatever. And people, I think people think that, you know, and it
right.
just really irritates me. It's like, well, I would just, you know, I always say I would send him to the glue factory, but I do respect, obviously, she knows this. Like, I respect this horse so much, and I worry about him so much. Like, that's why I sold him to the people that I did, because, like, they keep him at my house, and, like, they, you know, have been great. They've been great owners to him, really loves him, and, like, I think he deserves that. And I couldn't have sold him to an adult and then, like, love him the way I feel like he deserves. Does
right.
that make sense? Like, you know.
Yeah,
so,
when you found him the place that he does fit in, I think so many times, just like you're saying, like, we try to fit them into our boxes, and sometimes they just don't, you know, but you found him the place that he does fit in, and that he can be valued for what he is, and,
right.
I mean, that's the best thing you can do.
Yeah.
Yep.
So, that's what
And
we
I think that
too.
Goes both ways, like, back to what you said earlier of you don't try to change the horse, you change yourself, and we can only change to a certain degree. Like, you might be able to change more than me, and I think knowing that too, like, I see so many people just, like, fight and not get along with
me.
The same horse for years.
Me.
My husband, like, he...
I did that with him.
He's done that before. Like, I've seen so many people, and they just, like, get so frustrated, but, like, that horse just might do better with somebody, and you might do better with another horse, and
that.
So it's really good to be able to recognize your limits.
Yes. And I think, too... Just quickly, too, just even though I talked about, like, you changing for the horse, that doesn't mean that I have strict guidelines that I want them to follow and things they have to be willing to do. Like, it's a two-way street. They also have to try.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
You know, so it's not like I still hold them to a standard and want them to be able to do certain things, but I'm willing to work with them to get them to that point that they can do the maneuvers I want them to do or run barrels or whatever it is. Like, sometimes that path is just so different for all of them, but we still want that same end goal.
Yeah,
working towards that. But
and I think like, you know, I know some people who are like, I'm gonna work with this horse, like, if it takes me 5 years to get with this horse, like, that's what I'm going to do. And then you have some people who only, if they don't get, I think sometimes they don't give them enough time, you know, to get with them. So you see both ends of the spectrum. And, like, in your opinion, what is that time frame? And maybe time frame is not the right word, but when do you say, okay, like, this horse does not fit me, or it doesn't fit one of my lesson kids? Like, we've tried. I think you should move on and sell this horse and get this kid, you know, something else. Or, you know, so kind of how do you approach that to know this is something they're going to get along, or I just don't see this working out?
Right. Well, my mom's rule when we were growing up, and this is probably just stuck with me, was a year. She was like, when she advised a new horse, she would say, you got to stick it out for 1 year. And if you still can't get with them at that point, then yeah, we'll figure some stuff out.
Mm-hmm.
But give yourself a year for the horse to adjust and for you to adjust to them, and then make your decision if you want to keep them or not.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if they're dangerous, like with lesson kids and stuff, like if there's certain things that are just
absolutely
dead,
out,
those, yes, and you're done, like you need to go somewhere else. But But most of them, I tell them, like, you need to give yourself a year. Now, does it sometimes take longer than that?
It,
yeah.
It can.
But by that
especially
point,
around
you get to
here.
Choose.
Like, we don't get a run for a full year.
Right.
Like, a year here is probably a year and a half.
Yeah, I mean, realistically, yes. What is the season? How many times? Even if you go to a bunch of shows here, what's a bunch of shows?
Mm-hmm.
What is that, 15? Seriously.
Right.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Right. That's not... And when you look back, like, even if it is over a year, like, that's not... very many shows, you
right.
know, now
yeah.
if you can
yeah.
come, you know, like you have an awesome arena and so you can, the kids can make some runs and that does make a difference to be able to make runs at home,
mm-hmm.
you know,
yeah.
yes,
absolutely. You
right.
know, Rayleigh doesn't get to do that. You know, she only gets
mm-hmm.
to run at home or if we go somewhere, but I work full time. Her parents work full time. She goes to school. Like it's hard to do
oh,
that.
It's really
you
hard.
Know,
it
you
is.
Know,
yeah.
so. But
that's usually I would say a year.
That's, yeah, I
that's
think
what
that's
my
a good
mom
rule of
always
thumb.
made me do.
Yeah.
Yes, you're gonna
yeah.
fight. You're gonna
I tell
fight
them
it out.
You got a year. Back
yes,
it
yes. It's and
I like that, and I think it teaches them like a little bit of perseverance too, and like you learn lessons. Even if they didn't get along with that horse, how many lessons did they learn?
Oh yes, they yeah. always. They always, and we've talked about that. Like they can always look back and say, wow, that. They all taught me something.
They do.
You know, you
yep.
look back and you're like, eh, well, and it might not all be good, but at least you did learn something. Or
oh, yeah.
Even if you learn what you don't like,
mm-hmm.
that's helpful when you go buy your next one. You know,
that's
know
what.
This is a no for me. If they don't do this, I don't want it. Like, you learned
yep.
what you want.
Yep.
So
yeah, I
it's
think
helpful.
Happy did that for me, too. Like, I stuck with him way too long because I felt like I should be able to ride anything, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's. We've talked a lot about that. Like, it's, you have to put away your pride. Like, realistically, like, you see all these people winning, like, Pete Owen and Ashley Schaefer and all these people, you know, they win. But behind the scenes, do you know how many horses they've gone through? Like, they
for
get
sure.
to pick from, literally, we.
And they'll go with, like, certain bloodlines. And
yeah,
like,
and, like, a trainer
they
that.
They won't take a certain bloodline.
And, like, a big-time trainer that she dealt with this year, like, they told us they had 16 3-year-olds or something to pick
mm-hmm.
from, and they were going to narrow it down. Well, I mean, if you have 16 3-year-olds, you're going to be able to pick a couple that
yeah.
you really get along with. And
yeah.
I'm not taking anything from them. I'm just
no.
saying I think we hold ourselves to a higher standard because we think, not that I thought I was that kind of trainer, but still, you know, you feel like you're a
right.
horseman. You should be able to figure
mm-hmm.
that horse out, and I don't think that it makes you a bad person or a bad horseman or whatever if you just don't get along with a horse, you know. And I learned
right.
that the hard way, and I wasted a lot of time doing that.
Right.
And so now I'm a big advocate. I agree with you. It absolutely takes at least a year. Like I said, it took
mm-hmm.
me 2 years to get with Breeze, you know. And I'm not, but we were improving, and I think that makes a difference too. If
for
you're
sure.
just still struggling and struggling and struggling after a year, okay. But if you're improving, that's different,
yes.
you know, too, I think. So.
Yes, and you
yeah.
got to do your part in that year to, like, are you actually riding? Are you getting help? Are you hauling the shows? Or are you doing your work at home that you need to do? Like, it takes all of that to have a clear vision of what you need
yeah,
to do.
Yeah, it's not just
yeah.
time. It's not the time
yeah.
Yeah.
per se. It's the work in that amount of time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
yeah,
I agree.
Sarah, I want to talk a little bit more about your foundation and that type. Were there any special horses that, like, you want to mention or that just really taught you a lot looking back or
gosh, I've had a bunch, to be honest. And like I talked about earlier, my parents did such a good job of putting me on. I mean, they kept me challenged. They always and I wanted to be challenged. Like, I always wanted to get better, and they were really good about allowing me to do that. But they also put me on horses that gave me a lot of confidence and helped me grow at, like, challenge, but also grow and not knock me down all the time.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good balance.
Oh, yeah. They and safe. My sister and I. Spice definitely deserves a huge shout out. I mean, he gave me, I won a lot of money on that horse, and he made short goes at high school finals.
He's the one that you got from Mike Green?
Yes.
How was he bred?
He was Sunfrost, and I can't remember what else.
Was he, like, just poles, barrels?
Barrels
what
and poles.
Okay.
Yep. And he was either really good at poles or we hit a bunch of poles. There was no in between. But barrels, he was super consistent. And he got me pretty much got most of my college paid for.
Oh, wow.
Because I college radioed for New Mexico Junior College and then Texas Tech.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
That was very cool.
And that was all because of him, because he was, and I had a really nice road course too. But Spice was definitely my ticket to college.
Yeah.
So. Yeah.
He was phenomenal. Still is. He's after Roland and them were done, he was, he had some joint stuff, and so he's done. They brought him back here, and he's at my parents', retired, hanging
Aww,
out.
So yeah.
He'll be there till he dies.
Yeah.
And then I've had some really good rope horses. I have one rope horse both of them actually are still going, still teaching kiddos. One of my lesson kids owns Grady now, which I had in college, and he's phenomenal. I made college short goes on him. And then Chester, which I sold to Taylor Eastridge.
Mm-hmm. The Bay, mm-hmm.
Bay Road.
Yep.
And then Bray rode him a little bit. And then now another little girl has him, and he's still teaching kiddos to rope.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. Oh, just the best. But definitely Spy is definitely way up on the list.
Yeah.
But there's been many along the way. And I've got some really cool ones now. And so it's been fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what kind of roping did you do?
Breakaway roping. And I'm mostly heeled. I can head too, but I'm definitely a better heeler.
Gotcha. So. Did you do what? Like, did you do all of that in college?
I did.
Okay.
Yes. So I did. They don't have poles in college. So I did barrels, breakaway, team roping, and then I goat tied. My coach could usually talk me into like once a year. And I would just go all out. And usually it was real bad. And I would just, and like I didn't have a goat horse at the time, so like I'd end up on some girl's barrel horse just hauling butt down the pin, bail off, and make it work. And
the barrel horse was probably still like lapping the arena.
Exactly. Oh my gosh. It was bad. But he was like, you have to. Come on. You should goat tie. You need it for all around points. And so I'd be like, one time. I would give it my all. But it was
that's hilarious.
It was not good.
Like, this is the one hoorah I have a year. Yes, like
exactly. So.
How funny. Yeah. So you mentioned going to college radio. Mm-hmm. What was it like going to a completely different area from here?
Oh, it was honestly a dream come true. I don't even know why. But for some reason, growing up, I always wanted radio for Texas Tech. It was like my thing. I was working towards it. For whatever reason, I wanted to end up at Texas Tech. And so moving out there, I was just so excited. And it was an opportunity. And it was scary, but I had always known I wanted to do that. Luckily, I had some of the older kids in the Virginia High School radio were already out there.
Oh, okay.
So I knew people when I went out there. And I had a great coach, had a great church. It was a very good experience. So I went to New Mexico and then ended up at Texas Tech. So it was really cool.
That's really cool. So you went to New Mexico first?
Yes, New Mexico Junior College.
Were you a little bit bummed that you weren't at Texas Tech then? Or were you like, this is still a goal for me, I'm going to get there?
I actually went and interviewed at Texas Tech. And they did offer me some scholarship. But the coach there at the time was a rough sock guy. And it wasn't going to be a good fit.
Gotcha.
You know, he was more in tune with the rough stock guys, as they usually are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I already had friends, and I didn't know what I wanted to do in college, too, was the other thing, because I just wanted to go rodeo. I didn't really know what I wanted to do other than that. And so,
I think that's pretty normal
for
that age.
It was good for me to go to junior college. Like, yeah. I got to know the coach, all throughout high school finals. He had kind of recruited me through the years, and so I knew him, was mm-hmm. comfortable with him. I had friends that were already there that had had a great experience, and so it was kind of an easy move to go there. And I still knew after 2 years I'd have to figure out what I was doing next, and I knew I wanted to go to Tech after that.
Mm-hmm.
And luckily, whenever I moved to Tech, my same coach that I had at the junior college actually took the coaching position at Texas Tech.
Oh,
so
it worked
that's out. Really cool.
Yeah, it worked out really good.
I think it's awesome to be able to rodeo in college period no matter where you are. So
oh, yes.
I'm going to make that clear, but I'm just wondering, like, Texas Tech was always your goal. It's really cool that you ended up there, like, yes. even though you didn't go there first. So
yeah.
Yeah, that's yeah. really cool.
It was fun. It's a big school.
Did you show outside of college when you were there? Like, did you go to jackpots and stuff?
Yes. That's the cool thing about Texas. There's something anytime you want to go. So, yeah, there was lots to go to, and that was good and bad, and you learn a lot.
Yeah.
So it was good, though.
How fun.
Yes.
That is fun.
Good time of life.
Yeah. What did you go to school for?
So I went to Tech for petroleum engineering.
Oh, cool.
Yes. Yes. Not anything what I'm doing right now.
Oh, listen. Been there, done that, sister. Been there, done that.
We are both.
Been there, done that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought I would stay out in Texas. I think there for a while I was like, I loved it out there.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought I'd stay there. And so I was kind of gearing towards a job that I knew would pay for my horse habit out in Texas. And so that's kind of why I went that route. And I can do that some here too, but not like you can out west. And
oh,
so,
yeah.
It's funny how things work out though.
It is. So what brought you back?
Mostly family. I had some deaths in the family, like my junior year of college, I guess, sophomore and junior year of college, grandparents.
Mm-hmm.
And it just made me realize how far away from home I was when I couldn't get home for things, and saying goodbye over a phone is not ideal. And so that, and just, I miss the mountains, and just, it's a different life out there. It's very high speed and everything's always going, and part of me miss family and just how things are a little bit slower here. So it kind of brought me back here, and I mean, I've gone back and forth and different things, but this is still definitely home.
Yeah. So you don't see yourself moving out there or anything?
I mean, I could see me doing it temporarily or something.
But
like,
not to stay.
Not long term. I think I just love it here.
Yeah.
I really do.
Right.
And like we talked about at the banquet, the barrel racing industry in our state has really come a long way.
It has.
And so there's a lot more opportunities now. I think back then there wasn't as much. It was kind of a dry spell.
Mm-hmm.
And so I didn't feel like there was much to do at home. But now you still have to travel some, but there's a lot more opportunity to go to shows. There's some East Coast associations you can join, even if you want a rodeo. So there's options, whereas before it wasn't quite as much, I didn't feel like.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So is your heart more with roping or barrel racing?
Oh, I would say for right now it's barrel racing. I love to rope. But I think most of my clients and the people I ride for are more for the barrel horses. And so I've kind of gotten more that route.
Yeah.
But roping's fun. It's a blast. And it's no pressure. I feel like I don't put any pressure on roping. So it's always fun. Barrel racing, it's a little pressure, and you feel like you need to keep up, but it's, I'd say for now, barrel racing.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Would you ever see yourself, like, I know that you show a little bit of everywhere, but, like, would you ever want to get into rodeo again, or do you think that you'll stick with more of the open shows?
I think it would depend on the horse I have. The last couple of years, I really haven't had a horse that I thought would handle a rodeo ground.
Gotcha.
And handle that setup. You know, it's different, and the ground's
absolutely.
You know, ground's different, setup's different.
Lots of stuff happening.
Yes. My mare right now, if y'all know her, that would not be her setup. So, we're not rodeoing for a reason. But I think it would depend. My Rick's policy baby, he's fun, and he, I think, will take a lot more of that. So, like, he might be one I could go and do, more of that stuff at some point, but the horses I've had the last couple of years have not been rodeo horses.
Yeah.
And the money's just so good for these big barrel races.
It is. It's came a long way.
Yes.
Yeah. So
we were talking about that. Like, when I started breeding, the only thing that was here was Future Fortunes, and they were like no Future Fortunes horses. So
yeah.
we bred like a few Future Fortunes horses, but now it is starting to come this way. I mean, you can go, you know, Lexington is like 25,000 in Future Fortunes money.
And like the Diamond Classic and Tomorrow's Legend, like all of those are starting to move this
like
way.
Like best of the best and that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm, and like there's even some Futurities. I mean, they're not as big as, I mean, they're not as big as out west, but there are like opportunities, you know, where you can,
Aloha's
don't have
doing
to.
Yeah, some, and like there's some good stuff going on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's really cool. And exciting for all of us, but so tell us about your horses now and then kind of get into some of your goals for this year.
So I have Tink, a Ride to Fame, who is out of Super Fame, and she's like a half sister to Taylor's mare.
Baby.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
And she is very cool. I bought her from Roland Osborne, and she was just, I think, too much for their girls, and she's a handful, but she, when she's sound, she is so fun, and so I'm finally getting to where I think she's being more consistent and good, so I'm really excited about this year on her to see how
awesome.
She does.
Awesome, yeah.
Hopefully she stays healthy. She's one of those, she tries so hard that it doesn't surprise me when she gets hurt because she's just running her butt off, you know, so I can't get mad at it, but she
it is frustrating though.
Yes, it's hard.
Yeah.
And I've got a big gelding that I bought that we'll see what he's gonna do. He's been on the back burner for a long time before I bought him, and so I'm kind of excited about him. And then I've got my 4-year-old. Well, he's about to turn 4,
which is out of Julie Stud, right?
Yes.
Rick's gotcha. Policy.
And I love him. He's a really fun dude. So I don't know how fast he's gonna be. I'm still kind of, you know, you don't know, or I don't know right now. I haven't pushed him that much. He keeps kind of going through growth spurts, and I'll back off, and I'll ride him for a while.
What mare's he out of?
He's out of my dad's mare. She's off the Krogman Ranch. She's all ranchy bloodlines.
Gotcha.
She's huge, huge mare. One of the smartest, easiest to train horses I think I've ever been on. My dad got her as a 2-year-old. And she's the type you can pull her out of the field. You haven't rode her in a year, and she'll go spin a hole in the ground. She's just broke, like, and she doesn't forget it. And he's the same way, and I love
Aww,
it.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Mm-hmm.
Yes. So,
Monty's babies are typically fast, so I bet it'll be fast for you.
I hope he is. I hope so. So I'm really excited about him to haul him this summer. So mostly those two, or those three, and then the rest are just projects and young horses. So.
That's exciting. So is this the first time in a little while since you've had like a team of horses for the year?
Yeah. I mean, I've rode, I have a couple people that I've rode for that, like, they send me horses to ride that I've ran over the last couple years. But this is the first group of my own in a while that I've actually got to go have fun on. So I'm excited about that.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yes.
So what are your goals for this year with them? Do you have anything specifically, or?
I'm going to try to hit a couple. With work, it's always hard, but I'm going to try to hit, like, at least one big show a month and just see how it goes.
Yeah.
And see if I can keep them sound, see where they land, and get Gunny, the Rick's Policy Baby, some exposure and see how he does. I don't know.
Are you going to futurity him or not really?
It depends on how quick he comes along. He's doing really good, but I've kind of backed off. He's growing so late, I've been afraid to like hurt him, like push him.
Yeah.
And I was worried about that with him anyway, because his mom was a really late bloomer, and so I worried he was going to be that way too. But he's coming along really good, so I'm hoping that maybe by this fall I'll get to, but
just see what happens.
I'm not in a hurry with him by any means, and I've not futurityed. I've run a couple of derby horses, but not for charity, so that would be new for me, too, to be doing that. I'm really slow, too, in my training. I know I get in trouble for that a lot.
Me, too.
I just want to do it right, and so I tend to take them really slow, and by the time I get them going, like, they're usually really solid, but I take my time getting there, and so.
Her right here.
Yeah.
But, you know, we were talking, like, for us, mm-hmm. that are, you know, do it on the weekends and we don't have a new horse every year.
Yeah.
It's better in the long run because you do tend to have less setbacks.
Yes.
So.
Agreed. And you can fix them. Like, they're not like they just fall apart and they're done.
Yes.
If they're ready to go on, go on. If they're not, don't. But I think when people get in trouble is when they're doing really well and then they want more. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, you have to let those horses get confident. If you don't let that horse get confident in what it's doing, you are going to have setback after setback. And I see so many horses that are doing so well and then they start whipping them. Or then start, you know what I mean? And it's like, just let those horses, as they learn their job, they, in my opinion, automatically get faster. Yeah. Like, just let them do it. You know, I know some horses are on a timeline, but the majority of horses around here are not on a timeline. So why do that? All you're doing is causing problems, in my opinion, for yourself.
Yeah.
And I really don't like micromanaging one. Like, I want one to go in there and do their job themselves.
Yep.
Yeah.
And I don't want to have to tell them every little thing to do and you can't manhandle them.
In 13 seconds.
Exactly.
You can't do that.
And so I think for me, like, it's just, I want them to go at a speed that I don't have to do that and that I feel like they can handle it. And I mean, you got to push them and find out where their holes are. But my goal is always to get them where I don't have to micromanage them. And
let them be responsible for themselves.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah,
I agree completely.
Makes your job so much easier and good for them too. Like, just seen a post that, I don't know, maybe it was Fallon that posted it, that the horses know, like they know.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
they get frustrated too, I think.
Yeah.
And so, you can make their job easier and yours.
Too. Like, I'm trying to set these horses up. Most of them don't end up staying with me.
Yeah.
And so, I try to set them up to where someone else can go and ride them, because I can probably get them to do what I want and I can manhandle them and do all the things and get them through it. But then you got to put somebody else on them that might not have that skill set yet or whatever. And if you skip a lot of steps, it's just going to end up biting you in the long run. And it's going to set that horse up for a bad future, which is, for me, I don't want. I want them to have the best, you know.
Yep.
And if I can set them up for that, well, I'm going to do my best to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah,
I agree completely.
So tell us a little bit about your program now. What all you do, like, do you breed horses? I know you do some lessons for people. Do you take in training horses? What all do you do?
So, I wasn't planning on breeding horses, and then I fell into a Rick's Policy breeding, and it's been the best thing ever. I love him, and that's worked out good, but I do not plan on breeding. It's stressful. And I think I grew up doing it. My parents did it. And it's a lot of work. And
it's not easy in our area either.
No, it's not. And so I'd rather not do that. But, yes, I have a bunch of lesson kids. All my kids haul in, so they bring their own horses in, and we work with them on theirs.
Okay.
And I have really enjoyed that. It's been fun. And then, what else did you ask?
Do you give lessons just for barrel racing, or what kind of lessons do you give?
No, I mean, mostly. I will say mostly. But I have a few that come up that just want to, like, they've got a colt and they need help. They don't know what to do with them, and so they'll ride up and have me help them with that, or different things. I've got one girl that likes to do reining stuff, so we've just been working on the basic stuff that I can help her with, at least. And then I'm like, you need to go find someone else who does this, but I can get the basics done.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, mostly barrel racing for sure.
How many kids do you have right now?
I have between 10 and 15 a week that call.
Wow.
That's awesome.
Yes.
That is awesome, because like you guys were talking about earlier, finding a mentor, and for me coming into it late in the game, like, I didn't ride as a kid and stuff. It's hard to find someone that's willing to do that, because my gosh, it's a commitment. So it's really awesome that you offer that to our state, because there's not a lot of people that you can go and find a mentor these days without your parents being able to take you to the next state or, you know, whatever.
Yeah, so. And it's hard. And I got to give kudos to these parents, because they haul these kids up here on a school night, and sometimes they're here till 9, 10 o'clock, and then they're going home, getting home late. I definitely... They put in a lot of work, and I'm very proud of all the girls and their parents for all the work they put in, because it's not easy.
Yeah.
No. None of it's easy. And so they do a really good job. And then I think you asked about me riding outside horses. I'm not doing that as much anymore. I decided this past year that I was like, I'm going to focus on mine And I, mine just keep getting put on the back burner, and I love the people I ride for. They're great, and I still do some of them. But I'm not taking as many of people's problem horses and stuff like that. Like, I'm like, no, I really want to get mine rode. So this last year, I've been saying no a lot and just focusing on mine.
Yeah, so, I don't blame you.
Yeah, time and with my young horse, I'm just like, I just really want to put the time into it right now.
Yeah.
So I can't get it back.
And so you also do barrel races here.
Yes.
It's like mine and my husband's favorite pen. We love coming here and running. It's always good ground and good, nice people.
Yeah.
You don't have to deal with the crap that we deal with at some other places.
Y'all are so great. See, I tell everybody, I'm like, I cannot believe people come to our shows. Like, we are up here on a mountain, no parking, no warm-up, and we just expect you to come in and wing it.
It's okay. It's worth it.
So, I'm always amazed. I'm like, if I wouldn't show up to my place.
It's not that bad.
All for coming.
I like it, too. I think last year, maybe, was the first time that I had come here.
Yeah.
I think it was last year, right?
You came here when you had Bernice.
So year before, maybe.
So it'll be 3 years this fall.
Yeah.
That we got her. So probably 3 years now this year.
Yeah. So I haven't been here a whole lot. But it's kind of
when did you put on your first barrel race? It's probably been 5 years, hasn't it, at least?
Probably. Like right before the winter series. I remember.
Well, it was before COVID. So yeah, probably.
We did some fun shows, like just to help Corey. It started off just being to help Corey raise some money. And quickly evolved. into a
bigger
winter
series. How many horses was that one?
I know one we had was almost 100 in open.
Didn't you have like
right at
when Carla, Arthur, and all of them came? Didn't you have like? I felt like it was more than that. Like it was like 130 or.
It could have been with rollovers and stuff.
Yeah, I think that there was.
And I think that was probably the one that stressed me out, and I was like, no more,
never again.
And then we were really sad, and we talked her into doing a few more.
yeah. It got to the point, too, and I appreciate you saying it was such a happy place and happy people, but I think it started stressing me out, like, because we don't have the parking and different things, and so I was getting to where the arena was not my happy place anymore.
I get that.
And, like, oh, it's my slice of heaven, so I was like, if we're affecting that, then I'm not going to. I don't want to mess with that, and I'd like to go back to me actually enjoying it and it
that's
being a place
so
that I'm not stressed, you know.
It is so important. They talk about mental gain being a huge part and not getting burnt out. So
yes,
if that was definitely
so, I
kind of
had to
adjust.
I was like, I just it's just too much, and I worry too much, and I think I want it to be such a good thing for people when they do come, and it just is what it is. We can't, we're on perched on top of a mountain. We can't make it any better than it is.
Yeah.
So,
we just backed off but it's still been good. And I've loved, the last 2 years, I think I've been like the first show of the year and the last show of the year for NBHA.
Yeah.
And, it's really cool because you get to see everybody at the beginning of the year and then you get to see them
at the end
of the year.
Oh yeah. I never thought about that,
it's been fun to get to do that. I've enjoyed it for sure.
So I do want to ask you before this is over about some advice that you would give to people, because, you know, we started this podcast, like, not barrel racing with the rich or famous, like, and you have an arena, and some people don't have an arena, but I'm sure that you've been at points in your life where you didn't have that, and so we like to ask and just kind of pick your brain on things that people can do when they don't have arenas and that type of thing. And like, what is important and that you would like to give advice in your program that you feel like people could benefit from with doing it with theirs or their horses?
For sure. I think we touched on this earlier. The mentorship, I think, is a big deal. Or even just if you don't have the answers, like, you don't have to suffer through it. We all need answers to things. To this day, I still go ride with Marty Berry in Missouri, or I've gone to Marnie's whenever I get frustrated. And, we all still need answers to questions,
mm-hmm.
and we're still learning. So definitely don't be afraid to ask for help. And I think you can find places that you can go and put you and your horse in different situations. That has been valuable. I think we tend to stick in the same routine a lot of times and then get surprised when our horses do something out of the ordinary at a new place. And it's not their fault. They just haven't been exposed. And,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think vet work is very important. So many times. I see that a lot with the kids and stuff with their horses, because they're usually buying finished horses.
Older
that
horses.
Come to them, yes, with some yeah. issues. Or, mm-hmm. And I'm amazed at how many times it's he's got a bad tooth, or he needs his feet changed, or he just needs an injection or something simple, and wow, you got a different horse, you yeah. know. So definitely find your group of people that you can fit in with and that are going to help you grow and become better, and listen to your horse, and I think that's about it.
That's why we started this podcast, because we see so many people like struggling, and I think sometimes people just get lax because like they're from West Virginia, and so it's like it's not a big horse community. You know, there's not a big horse community here. I do feel like it's grown some, but it's hard. I mean, that's just like I just bought 3x3x8 alfalfa bells, and like you can't get those here. You know,
yes.
like it that's sure. like out west you can, it's around every corner, but it's not here. And so there's a lot of people who are just like weekend warriors, you know, like we call them. But, you know, if you're asking your horse to go perform and win you buckles and saddles, like horsemanship is horsemanship. Like, I don't
yes.
care if you're going for the world title at the NFR or you're going for, you know, a series that's around home. Like, that's not fair to your horse to not be the best horseman that you can be. And so I think people make a lot of excuses as to why they can't do something, why they can't bet their horse, why they can't feed their horse. You know, their horse isn't fat enough, and that's okay because it's winter. No, that's not okay.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, any time of year.
Right. You know, so that was part of the reason, because we wanted to have like a platform where people could get information from people that they see every day, so that they know that it's
really
possible to
yes.
do that here,
yeah.
you know?
Yeah. And it's not easy. It's hard here. It is.
It is. It's a lot harder. I mean, that's why we quit. Like, that's why I quit breeding, because the vet that I did it was still 2 hours away,
mm-hmm.
but then he left, and you had to drive 4 hours away, you know? And so, but I feel like if you can't do it right, you don't need to do it at all. That's just for your horse. You know, if you can't take care of your horse and do right by your horse, then you don't need to do it. That's just, you know, that's kind of how we feel about it. And
for sure.
So,
And the more educated you get, the more you're even going to learn more in depthly about those kind of things, if you are doing the right things and if you're not. And so it takes getting out there and asking questions. And
it does.
There's lots of information out there and lots of ways to learn.
Yeah.
You gotta
and
be
I think there's
willing to do it.
So
yep.
much basic information, too, that people can learn and also find it interesting to know. Like, I think I love to know what everybody's doing, because I'm
oh,
like,
yeah.
should I be doing something
yeah.
better or different?
Yeah,
or?
there's more than one way to skin a cat.
Oh, yeah.
You know? So,
yeah.
I mean, just like, we all have very similar values, but I'm sure there are things that we all do differently that are all correct.
Right.
But it's just what works, you know, this works for you, and it might be because of where you live, or it might be because you have an arena or you don't, or you have, you know, just whatever, you
mm-hmm.
know, what works for you. And so anyway, I just thought, you know, people make excuses and people do, you know.
Oh, I completely agree.
I think people also live on the, well, that's how my grandpa did it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, we can learn so much stuff from, you know, our grandparents. Like, honestly, I feel like they were way more in tune with the earth and the animals than
yeah.
what we are now, because we've got phones and I think we've gotten away from things that are important. So I'm not sitting here saying that that isn't important. However, you have to think of all the research, all of the different things that have happened
mm-hmm.
between when they were doing stuff. And, you know, when they were doing stuff, they were probably doing maybe doing the best that they could do, but that's not the best that we can do now, you
and
know,
even just
with
in,
a lot of things.
Even just in my lifetime of horses, like in the last 12 years, how things have changed, you know?
Yeah, things have came such a long way, even veterinary medicine. And accessibility to us, too. You know, you didn't used to have as many sport horse vets even around us, within a tri-state. And now we have, some of those at our fingertips and stuff. And same thing with training and things like that. So it just like we were talking about, incentives and bigger shows coming to the East Coast. It's slowly trickling. And
it is.
So it's cool to learn.
It is.
Tell us a little bit about your feed program and maintenance things that are vital to you every year with your horses.
Well, honestly, I feed mostly forage-based diet. I'm very blessed with good pasture. So my horses are out on pasture all the time, unless it's really bad or they need stall rest. Also, we grow alfalfa, so I have alfalfa. I don't feed it. I think people probably think I feed that a ton too, but I don't. I just supplement with it for the ones that need it. I have my one gelding is a very thoroughbreddy, and he has been really flourishing on the dove feed, so I've been feeding that to him and been really happy with it. I am not huge on a bunch of supplements unless they need something. Tink, we think has some metabolic issues, so she gets some stuff for tying up.
Okay.
But other than that, I just kind of listen to what they need. My old guys, I've actually used the Summit injections before and really, really liked that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But I don't really have any old guys right now. So, mm-hmm. Mostly I try to keep my horses in as good a shape as I can. I don't kill them. I'm not out here riding them for hours every day. They get their regular workouts in. We do some drills and get them,
consistency
keep them
is key.
Fit. Yes. Yep. And I have found that has done more for keeping my horses sound than putting a bunch of stuff in them.
Mm-hmm.
So I just try to keep them really fit. I keep them on a routine with their feet, their teeth. That work. They get that done very routinely. Even if they're sound, Tink's going to go and get checked out sometimes just to make sure. Because they're so tough, too. And she's really tough. She won't show me if she is hurting. So
Yeah.
I every now and then will just take her anyway because I'm make sure nothing funky's going on. But I keep it pretty simple. They get hay and alfalfa and grain if I see them falling off. And that's forage-based, too. So
yeah.
I try to keep it pretty simple.
What vet do you use? Performance.
I use Dr. Denton in Abington, Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
He's great close by. I take for all my vet checks or things like that. I go to him. If we have more serious things, a lot of times I'll go to Park Equine in Kentucky.
Gotcha.
Okay.
Yes. I have a local vet too that does Coggins, Faye Goodling with Tri-Counties. She'll do all my basic stuff and get me drugs if I need them.
Yeah.
But But Dr. Denton's great, and then go to Park, see Dr. Park.
That's nice that you have all of those resources, and it does.
Yes.
It takes a team to
all
keep these
is.
Horses going. They're athletes, and it's not easy.
Yes.
Well,
for sure. Oh, and chiropractor. I do acupuncture.
We're getting ready to start.
How often do you, because I'm curious, how often do you do chiropractic stuff?
So she usually comes every 2 months.
Okay.
And then, my horses honestly don't even need it that often. I would say even mine, because she's been coming for, I don't know, probably 4 years now, honestly, Jennifer Benson.
Yep.
Yeah,
but we're getting ready to use her this spring.
Yeah,
I'm excited.
Her once already and really was impressed with
her.
She's great.
Oh, she's so great. And she's so wonderful, too, because if it's an issue she can't help you with, she's you need to see a vet. This isn't something I can help you with, so I won't even waste your money and your time. Just take it to the vet and
That's
then come
amazing.
Back to you.
I'm
she's
the
great.
Biggest skeptic because I have been in the vet industry and I've seen so many vets just not know what they're talking about,
mm-hmm.
or and other professionals too, and farriers, and
yes.
So I'm very big, you have to prove yourself to me before I'm okay, I'm sold on that
right,
person.
Lisa.
And so when she came, I've done chiropractic before, but not a ton, and she came, and it was funny because I had one colt that I was I know where she's sore because she's already had a lameness exam, and my vet diagnosed it, and he's
we're going to see, like, when she grows, if she gets better, and if she doesn't, like, sometimes these young horses just are in a funny growing stage, mm-hmm. and so they're a little bit sore here or wherever. They don't know how to use their body, that type of thing. So it was funny because I was like, I'm going to see if she just picks up on it. And if she doesn't, doesn't mean she doesn't know what she's talking about, but I was just curious. And she did. Like, she found it immediately, and she was like, honestly, have done this enough to know, like, I think I can help you with this. She was like, I'm not saying that you don't need to go and get her injected. Like, if your vet thinks that, by all means do it. She was like, but let me work on her, like, one more time before you take her and get her injected. And I'm not kidding. I thought that she might be getting a little bit sore because she, like, started not turning the third barrel. But also, I am the world's worst at, like, being like, I need to go to the vet. Like, yeah. I need to, you know, so... I've been trying really hard this year with the colts, being like, okay, is this just a colt thing? And, like, mm-hmm. Ashley's really good at being like, sometimes colts just do that. Yeah. So I was like, if it's a problem, like, she'll keep showing us. So we did a drill with her where we started making her, like, really snap around the third and overturn it. And it was funny because after Jennifer worked on her, like, she started knocking the third because she was overturning it too much. So we were like, well, she fixed that problem. So it was really, she's awesome.
Jennifer's great. So, but I found, like, my horses that I've used her for so long, like, they really, I bet maybe once, twice a year she works on them. Because I think I've kept her on such a schedule in the beginning. Like, yeah, maybe they required it kind of regularly. But now I think they've just muscled so evenly. And been able to, like, I've kept them from being sore enough that they, I don't see them compensating and doing a lot of the things, so she's not had that much to work on because we've been able to kind of keep up with it and get them really well-rounded.
What do you feel like, because I haven't done a lot of chiropractic work, mm-hmm. but I think my biggest problem with it is I feel like where I live, I can't. Until now, and Holly has got her coming, which actually, my horses are going to have to go to her house to get it done because I'm going to have to work, but at least it's going to be something I can do.
Yes. But have Jennifer call you too afterwards so she can explain it all because she's great.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I did get to see her work on hers. Good. And if it's on a weekend, it'll be fine, but I know sometimes they talked about like middle of the week kind of stuff and I won't be able to make it there, but how much do you feel like in the beginning? I mean, I know it depends on the horse and if they have issues and whatever, but like to me, it seems like 2 months or 3 months, like I feel like that's a long time, but I don't know a lot about it. So is that like if you have a horse that has issues, like mm-hmm. what is a normal like schedule that you feel like she, is it like every 2 weeks? Is it like a month is a lot? Is it what?
I mean,
what do you
really
see?
With the whole every 2 months or so? I mean, and even in the summer, if it's thick, and you have a horse that's, like, got some existing issues, once a month would probably be more accurate.
Mm-hmm.
But if they don't have anything major, like, every other month like that has been
great
plenty
for you.
For a lot of the kids. And and it's funny, too, now because I find my kids picking up on it, too. Like, they'll be like, oh, my horse is doing this. Like, I think his rib's out.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Like, he's not catching his lead just right. Or he's not stopping good on, and he's picking his foot up on this side.
But
and
how
so
cool is it?
On.
How cool is it though that you have
like,
a kid?
You need to call the chiropractor.
It is. It's good though.
Yeah, that is good.
It's just little tells. Like I think it's, and I can always tell a difference like right away. The next time I ride them usually.
That's awesome.
And
see,
it's
I've never been able to
just
like in the.
Off.
I've never been able to in the past, and I don't know. I wasn't in tune with my horses as well then. Like it was when I was very new into riding that I. Like, have the opportunity to do that, but this time, really, like, with Jennifer, mm-hmm. we really noticed it was so, because she was like, you're going to notice, like, a big difference with this one. She was like, not as much with the other one, but, like, mm-hmm. this one, you're going to know, and I was like, yeah, we'll see about that. Oh, no, yeah, we did.
Well, I think it's so important, too, for kids, like, it's so cool that you say the kids mm-hmm. are picking up on that, because how many adults, like, how many horses do you see that have alley issues?
Yes.
And mm-hmm. everybody's like, this horse is so stupid. This horse is that. I'm like, you missed the boat
way back then.
6 months ago when this horse was holding his foot out or this horse was cranking his tail whenever you ask him to lope off. Like, you missed so many freaking signs. And now you're saying your horse is stupid because you don't listen to your horse.
And you're upset
because
they had to escalate their signs to
yes.
tell you to,
exactly.
to really get your
I'm
attention.
I'm like, when these horses are rearing up, and they are running backwards, and they are doing all of these things, going in the pen, mm-hmm.
You have missed so many cues.
And someone needs to give a class, or maybe we could get somebody on the podcast about horse like behavior and just signs. Like,
yeah.
People don't read their, they don't listen to their horses, and like, they do tell us.
Jennifer might be good.
Yeah.
she was like, I was impressed with how, like, she, you could tell she really enjoyed, like, teaching, too. Like,
she's so knowledgeable. Mm-hmm. And she's always researching, like, sometimes she scares
That's
me
so
with
important.
All the things that she comes up with. She's like, well, it could be this, and it could be this. And I'm like, oh, gosh, you're making my head spin.
Yeah.
Don't
just
say that.
Don't tell me
that. Oh,
me
and her will be a nightmare together.
Yeah, I know. Yes. So, like, but she is, she's on top of it. Like, she's on top of it more than the vets a lot of times. Like, she's, it's funny. There's been many a times now with her that she'll mention something, and, like, the next time I go, the vets won't say anything. But if they still haven't figured it out and I go back, like, it's something they're like, well, you know, there's this new thing, and it could be that, you know, and I'm like, ah, Jennifer was spot on.
Yeah.
She probably, you know, like, it's really cool that she probably has to be that way, because she doesn't have the diagnostics that vets do. Like, she has to learn to read the horses.
You would have to pick up on it.
Yeah.
Have you noticed a difference, like, with injections? Do you think that those correlate, or do you think it's two completely different things? Like, do you feel like if it's something you do regularly, could that help with less injections potentially, or what
do
you feel like?
I do. I think it seems like, unless you x-ray the joint and it looks like there's actually damage or arthritis or something that's going to keep continually causing problems, if you can put out that inflammation fire in their joint, and keep it at bay, then it will start to heal itself and get better over time.
Mm-hmm.
But if you continue to let that fire burn and you only put it out, not routinely, until it's like blazing on fire, well, then you're going to have a hard time managing it. And you're going to have to continue that, and it's probably going to have long-term repercussions. But with mine, I mean, sometimes it's just they've had one injection to fix it, and then we go back, and if it's better, we don't. But I stay on top of it so it doesn't turn into something massive.
Yeah.
I think if you can do that, then, you can fix a lot of things, in
I
my
agree.
Opinion.
I agree. And, like, with it, I mean, you got to think about it. Like, her SI was out. Well, if that's out, like, for so long, of course it's going to inflame her joint. Like, if she's not
Everything
able to
below
use
there.
It. And,
yeah.
Yeah, like, you know, if they're not able to use it properly. And just like when I fractured my tailbone, it hurt my hip because of the way that I like caught. So, I mean, I feel like you would think it would have to go hand in hand.
Something with the acupuncture, or not acupuncture, the chiropractor that's funny too, is I have noticed there is definitely a correlation to me being out and how it affects my horses, because I go to the chiropractor. And, if I am out in my, like, left hip, you will find the next time Jennifer comes that most of my horses are out in their left side.
Nuh-uh.
Yes.
That's
really
interesting.
Yep. I've seen that many times.
That, how crazy
that
is that?
I can look back, and if that usually correlates, which I found. I
so
find
what
really
comes first? Did they make you out, or did you make them out?
No, that's the question.
That just gives you that gives you more like want to take care of yourself. Like, maybe I should get my back taken care of.
I know,
and
right.
My horses
it does affect them. I know even my chiropractor, he made me stand on a scale, like two scales actually, like 1 foot on each scale. The last time I was in, like, I was having some trouble, and I had like 5 more pounds. And I was standing with more weight. Like, I was standing there thinking I was standing nice and square and equal weight. And I had, like, 5 pounds heavier on this foot.
Really?
Yeah.
What did it end up being?
I was just
was
off of my hips.
Was that from your hips?
You were compensating and didn't even realize it.
Didn't realize it. Yeah.
And that's what and another thing that we have talked about before, but with compensation like that, is I find here that a lot of people think they can go to the vet one time and their horse gets injected and they think that they're better. And we really try to advocate for horses, and, you know, I don't know how much it gets through to people. But just because you go one time doesn't mean that it's fixed, because a lot of times what you are fixing the secondary problem the first time you go.
Correct.
And so you have to fix that, so that they can see, you know, what is actually the problem. And you might have to go two or three times. And, like, I am kind of a
and
jerk.
And not two or three times a year, like,
in a
two
row.
Or three times in a row, like, in a couple months.
Yeah.
People, so many times I see people, like,
well,
bad mouth
a vet
or, like, talk crap about because they didn't find an issue. Or you have the person that they went one time this year, so they assume that, like, everything's fine. And, like, they can't. That's just like a mechanic. When you take your car to the garage, if it has 20 things wrong with it, they don't fix all 20 of those
right.
things. Like, they find those
they fix
in
the
a couple
one thing
times.
That broke.
Yes.
Yeah.
And, well, then they go from there. And it's the same thing with horses.
Well, and I think sometimes people will go and they get, and I'm not saying, I'm all about second opinions. Absolutely.
I am too.
But yes. I think that, you know, I have actually personally seen, you know, they go, the vet injects. Well, it doesn't fix the horse. So then they go to a different vet. Well, then that within 2, 3, 4 weeks. So then that vet finds the issue. And then they're like, well, he didn't know what he was talking about, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, he probably would have found that too.
Well, no, he just helped that vet.
Yeah, because he got rid of the secondary issue, you know.
Oh, for sure.
So I think, you know,
and that's why it's important to have a relationship with your vet, not just go. That I think that's the problem with going once a year or less and expecting this human who just met your horse
who
for the first
time. Who
doesn't
know
today,
your horse at all.
To figure out all your problems when you don't have a relationship with them. You know, they don't know anything about you and your program. They don't know anything about your horse.
Yeah, are you crazy?
They're
are
expecting
you
a lot out of a person to figure
that
stuff
true.
Out.
Like,
yeah.
Do you worry too much about your horse? Do you not worry enough about your horse? They don't know that if they
right.
don't have a relationship with
right.
you.
Yeah.
You know, so
that takes time.
Yeah, and if I tell you, like, you know, like, I don't, it just, you know, just to figure out what somebody gets worked up over, because they might be super worked up over something and it might not matter, or they might go in and not care and you've got an actual issue, but
exactly.
it helps them if they kind of know how you are with stuff, you know?
Yes.
So
if you can establish that, oh gosh, you can get a lot accomplished that way and work together as a team, because ultimately you know your horse better. You're around them all the rest of the days of the year that they aren't.
Yes.
And so you get to be their advocate and help speak for them, and then the vet gets to look at them and see what they can find, but it takes that relationship to get a lot done.
Yeah, and if you're like, I feel like us, you know, my horse can cock her ear funny.
Yeah.
And I'll go, and he'll be like, there's nothing wrong, and I'm like, yes, there is.
I know there is. Yes.
There's something wrong because she doesn't do that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's not what she does.
Yeah.
And so then they'll look at it, and I'll be like, oh, well, I mean, yeah, okay, maybe it's like, she's a little bit sore here, but I don't, and I'm like, well, I mean, I don't know, but like there's
yes.
something wrong.
Yeah.
But if you don't have that with your horse, then you're going to end up with a horse that has alley issues, you know?
For sure.
I mean, you just are.
For sure.
So it is so important. And like I said, we started this to like advocate for the horse, like so much, because I do see.
You see it.
Oh, I get so frustrated with it, you know, and it's tough. So getting people like you on here to like reiterate, like, kind of what we're saying, you know.
Definitely. You gotta get it.
Yeah. It's tough. So, you know, I don't know. I just think, I feel sorry for horses sometimes.
Oh, for sure.
You know.
For sure. But they love their job, and I find most of them love their kids or love their owners.
Yes.
And they want to do a good job, and I think that's the important thing to keep in mind. Like, horses don't want to be mad. They don't want to be irritated. They don't want to be, I don't even think horses love just being, you know, bucking broncs and crazy
right.
things like that. Like, I think those are signs that they are not comfortable and
unhappy or
yeah,
whether
uncomfortable.
That's mentally
yeah.
or physically.
Yeah,
sometimes.
And you gotta listen to those things. They don't want to be a turd to you and try to buck you off and try to run off. Like, they usually want to be willing to work with.
Yeah.
So, if they're not, then there's a problem.
Yeah.
Whether it's with you or their past or whatever it may be, but there's some type of disconnect there.
And they don't do things on purpose. That's one thing that drives me crazy. My horse, he does this just to make me mad. I'm like, no, he doesn't.
That's not how they work.
They don't think
don't
like
understand.
We do.
Yes. I think I see that a ton. People think horses think like people do.
Yes.
And they treat them like people, and they... that can get you in such a pickle because, mm-hmm. and you're just so far off, honestly, because yes. they don't think like we do. They don't. So it's not even fair to make that assumption that they do. And yes, we have similar emotions and they exert those things, but their thought process and everything is way different than ours. And that's something, if you want to learn how to work with horses, is to understand how they think, how they see. There's a lot of things about a horse that we just see through our own eyes instead of looking at through theirs.
Yeah, we put human emotion on them.
Yeah, and it's not real.
No,
right. You need to be more realistic.
Yes. And so. I want to touch back with your lesson kids, just because we do have so many kids, and I feel like, honestly, probably are more like younger people in general are more likely to listen to this than older people, because I feel like a lot of older people don't listen to podcasts, you know.
Yeah.
But I just wanted to touch base because I know you said something about finding like mentors and people that work with, like, that you can ride behind, because I think even as young kids, older kids, like, we talk all the time about sending horses to or riding with people that you can ride behind.
Yes.
And
big deal.
That is so important. You know, I learned that the hard way. I thought that a trainer was a trainer, mm-hmm. and that, you know, because I was so blessed to have Glenn for so long, and I just got along with him, and he always did what he said he was going to do, and he always rode when he said he was going to ride, and he could get stuff done, and we found out this year that not everybody can do that.
Right.
And I found out the hard way that, you know, you can't ride behind everybody. And
right.
so I just wanted, because you mentioned, like, you just kind of briefly mentioned that, and I think that is so, so, so important.
Agreed.
To find people and
Agreed.
Clinics, like we've talked about,
yes,
you know,
clinics.
People going to clinics, and just because you go to one and you don't learn a whole lot or you don't like that person, like, that doesn't mean don't go. Like, I went to a Marnie clinic last year. Oh my gosh, I love her so much.
And I think that's a good point. Like, you know, I said it's hard to find mentors in our area, but there are always clinics. And if you want to soak, you can learn a lot in a weekend clinic.
Yes. 1000%. You can. And it takes getting out of your comfort zone and going and not being afraid to ask questions and
being receptive of the knowledge. Like, if you're going and you're putting yourself out there, like, have an open mindset. Like, you don't know everything, and there are things that you can learn
mm-hmm.
from everything.
And you can change.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it's good to change. Like, I don't think that's a bad thing.
Yeah.
So, it's good.
Yes, you can. I learned a lot from the Marnie Clinic. I loved it. I've been to several clinics, and mm-hmm. I absolutely loved it. It was so good. Like, you know, a lot of their philosophy I agree with, like, mm-hmm. you know, Bob
Very
was
simple.
Like, yes, that's what I said. Yep. It is. It's
She's
like
cut and dry.
So simple. It seems, I don't know. It's like, really?
And there wasn't a horse there that it didn't work for. So that should tell you something.
Mm-hmm. So many.
And it's not like Marnie hasn't been ridiculously, you know, done so well.
Oh,
in so many setups.
Oh, absolutely.
Like rodeo, barrel races, for charities. Like,
oh, she's
just
proven 100%.
She's crazy. And I've never met a woman that works harder. Have you ever been to her place?
No,
so
I haven't.
I've gone, and she works so hard. I mean, that woman rides 30 horses a day, and I mean, she's off one, on one, and just, she's amazing. There's not many like her.
But that was something else we talked about, too, and actually, she said that in the clinic. She said that she rode, like, 20 horses a day or whatever, and then we were talking about, like, how we hold, like, we feel bad whenever we go to the barrel race and, like, we get our butt kicked. And I'm like, when you're competing against somebody that rides 20 horses a day, mm-hmm. and even if I rode every horse that I own, it would be four horses a day. And I'd work full time and whatever. Like, I think we have to give ourselves some grace and, like, just be like, I'm doing okay.
Yes.
Like, you know, I'm doing okay.
And some people just live, breathe, and eat it, you know, and just their whole lives revolve around it.
Yeah.
And that's great if you can do that, and that's the life you want to live. But for some of us, that's not it. You know, we've got other things and other life to do, and so that's okay, too.
Yes. Yeah. So. I just thought, you know, but I never thought about that until I went to that clinic and she said, and I don't know why, but that slapped me right in the face. And I was like,
of course.
This I is never harder for me. Thought about, well, I never thought about that. Like, it just never hit me. Like, how much more does she ride
well,
than me? And I ride almost every day and in the, for
good weather.
From March to October.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
I ride, I literally do. I'm so anal about my horses being in shape, and I will miss horse shows if I don't feel like they can go, you know. So I'm really big on that.
Yeah.
And
well, and I think that it's really hard. It's really easy to get wrapped up in that too, but I try to remind myself, like, you know, a lot of those people, they, like, we think of them as, like, privileged, and, like, they get to go and do all of this, and, like, yes, they work hard to get where they are, but, like, how amazing, it's so unfair that we can't do this as a livelihood around here.
Right.
But, like, we also, like, even just this year, I've really started to realize, like, it's a business for them, and they don't get to enjoy horses the way I do.
Right.
Because I get to choose, you know, I get to choose. I don't have to do anything.
Yeah.
And they do.
For sure. I remember we went to dinner one night, and Marnie was talking about the last time they went on vacation, and it was, like, a couple years ago. You know, like, their vacations are around going to Arizona to a horse show, and it's very, very different life. And they choose that, and they like it, but we have a lot more freedom to do a different life.
But I also think we have, on top of that, we have the ability to keep horses. And they can't always,
and the ability,
because they live off of selling horses, you know?
Yep.
And so, I think not always. I think there are some that are better at it than others, but I think that it's really hard for them to make a decision, like, for the horse and not for the business.
Oh, I'm sure it would be.
So I'm happy that I don't have to do that.
That pressure.
Yes.
To perform.
Yep.
On that level.
Yep.
Yeah, and you get so, like, I get so attached to, like, certain horses. Not every horse. Like, I actually have sold most of the horses I've had, but it has to be on my terms. And, like, I feel like you can't do that. Like, I have to be ready to be like, okay, I feel like this horse could be a productive citizen for somebody else. And my time is, like, you know, I'm good with, like, being done now. I don't like to be forced to sell one, but, you know, when I'm ready. And they don't have that luxury. And you know that they have to have horses that they don't really want to sell.
Yeah.
You know?
Or to specific people. You know, like, oh, I don't know if this is a good fit. But, you know, you gotta
eat. You gotta pay the bill.
Yeah, hard decisions.
Yeah.
For sure.
So it's not all. And they work way harder than what we do. Like, having a regular job. Mm-hmm. I mean, that job is not 9 to 5. You know, that job is 24 hours sometimes.
Yes.
You got a sick horse. You got, you know, whatever. Which, I mean, I guess if they're sick, we do too. But you know what I mean.
Yes.
It's different,
yeah.
I think.
A lot less forgiving.
Yes.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
Yep. Well, Sarah, it has been great talking to you and picking your brain. We really appreciate you agreeing to do this. And so thank you for coming on. And we're excited to see you more in the pen this year with your own team of horses. And, of course, at the shows you do. We always love coming here, so.
Of course, thank you for having me.
Thanks for listening to our podcast, where we're not so rich,
not so famous,
but we're all trying to be.